rival of Indiana in what I wrote after the Morehead State game. It was hard not to be. I mean, listen, Morehead State's a good team. They're the second highest. If you use the KenPom rankings, they're the second best team Indiana's beaten this season, which obviously at home, I should say, well, I guess third best behind Maryland, but third best home win behind Maryland and Wright State this season, and second best out of conference win is probably what I was going for there at the beginning. That being said, obviously for Indiana, you need to be winning that game, and you need to not have to, put together a furious comeback in the second half of the second half to do it. I think in the aggregate, it's pretty clear this team is really struggling offensively. They're at 100th nationally in adjusted offensive efficiency. They don't shoot a lot of threes. They don't make the ones they shoot. Just to be frank, they are an average defensive rebounding team and a fairly bad offensive rebounding team. Their saving graces are pretty obvious. Number one, they're very good shooting twos. Number two, for a lot of the same reasons, they are outstanding getting to the free throw line. They have the eighth best free throw rate in the country. So there's probably an extent to which these games come down a little bit to the fact that Indiana just can't put together consistently without sort of maximum effort. Indiana can't put together the offensive stretches necessary to just kind of bury these teams. Typically, when you look at games like this or Florida Gulf Coast or certainly like an Army, the complexion of those games tends to be that because basketball is a sport that everybody has presumably on the floor has played for a while, even if there are huge disadvantages or disparities in depth or athleticism, they will be competitive for long stretches. And if you break down a sort of a game in a play-by-play sense, what you'll find is there'll just be one stretch where Indiana's plus 12, and then one stretch where Indiana's plus 10, and then one stretch where Indiana's plus 12, and Indiana will win the game by 34. And that's kind of the complexion of how those games go, that at some point there's a lineup mismatch or something that just kind of the better team is able to take advantage of. But I think this team struggles, frankly, because it just, unless it is just sort of maxing out its focus, its effort, its intensity, which obviously you want to be able to do in Big Ten games, but you don't have to do it for 31 games a year. It's going to wear you down. Then it can't score at the level required to even pull away in these games. On the other hand, I think Mike Woodson would be at least somewhat valid in pointing out Indiana's only lost games it was supposed to lose to this point. It's only got to navigate two more of these guaranteed games before it's kind of out of the briar patch when it comes to, just absolutely disastrous losses. There's only one at this moment in time, anyway. There's only one more team on Indiana's schedule starting in the new year that's outside the KenPom top 100. That's Penn State. And Mike Woodson would be valid in saying, hey, and we also started 2-0 in Big Ten play, and our last big time non-conference performance was our best. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is, especially with what I suspect is the impending return of Xavier Johnson, Mike Woodson might be a little bit more sanguine about the state of his team and the direction of his season than maybe his fans would. Now, I don't know if he should be or not. I suspect his time in the NBA may have a little bit more to do with that. But it is. I would be curious to get sort of an unfettered take from Woodson on just the direction of his season at the moment.
Well, the other interesting part that you bring up is when we're talking about Xavier Johnson and why it's important, and I think the why is we get that he's out. Indiana has missed time with him, but this is not the same team that it was last year. Last year, if you go through the box scores, you can count the games that Trayce Jackson-Davis didn't even play in the Christmas or New Year or the new Thanksgiving time rather, and Indiana was winning by 30 points. I mean, we're not close to that right now. So that's it is important he comes back. The mixed messages though have been sent. If you listen to his radio show on Monday night, he says, "You know what? We've got him on the elliptical and we've got him on the stationary bike, but he's done nothing on the court." The broadcast on Tuesday night, Kevin Kugler and Bruce Weber. Bruce Weber was excellent, by the way. I got to give him some credit. He was fantastic breaking down the game. But they're like, yeah, and Xavier Johnson could be back early in January. So I don't know what to believe.
I mean, he was out of the boot Tuesday night as well. He'd been in the boot
So that's
pretty consistently. He was out of it. I would not be, you know,
he was in it Saturday.
This is not me reporting this. I'm just kind of
right
putting two and two together between some rumors I've heard and some obviously the things you see. I would not be surprised to see him back, if not at the resumption of Big Ten play, very close to it.
I think you got to give him the Kennesaw State game to get loosened up, get the rust off a bit. But again, boot Saturday. Monday, hasn't been on the court yet. Tuesday, heck, he's going to play right around the corner. Okay, you need whatever you can get for this team because right now the top eight players, six of them are freshmen and sophomores. Walker and Galloway, your two biggest producers the last two games, have been the guys to carry it, and they just need guys that have been around the block and know what they're doing.
I think there's also just, you know, and sometimes this is a bit of a starter bench thing. Sometimes it's, I mean, a lot of times, frankly, it's a 3-point threat thing. I think they're just in a place where they get into these funks where they just don't look like they know where to go for their offense.
Yeah, they're easy to guard because they don't have anybody who can get their own shot. That's another problem.
Yeah, well, but there's, I mean, it's less that. We've covered, you and I have both, you know, watched, covered, discussed teams that just weren't athletic enough.
This team's athletic.
To beat the teams in front of them. There are areas where this team is. Kalel Ware is often more athletic than the guys guarding him, especially in the games we're talking about. Mackenzie Mbako, I think, is beginning to find his offense. I think he's beginning to figure out sort of where to go with it. This is, Tuesday night marked six straight games in double figures in scoring, and I think his rebounding numbers are equally relevant there. His last six games, 8, 7, 4, 2, 5, 7. You know, I think Indiana's got some stuff that they've started to carry over from last year with Ware and with Renew that gets Trey Galloway better shots, better looks, better sort of, you know, just cleaner, the kinds of shots that we know he can hit, the shots he wants. But then in the same breath, you know, you've got guys, you know, that you kind of needed to be scorers or at least shooters off the bench that are scuffling. Gabe Cupps, this is a little bit of a reversal of the way we see guys like this, but typically, you know, smaller guards. But Gabe Cupps is probably a lot more ready to contribute defensively right now than he is offensively for Indiana. You are hurting for not having Xavier Johnson. I think there's probably less. I think I would rephrase what you said. I don't know that this team can't find its own shot. I think it's sometimes that these guys can't find each other's shots.
Well,
you know,
that's fair.
The highest assist rate on this team is Malik Renew, and his is only 22.2%. Xavier Johnson's at 17.7%. And then the guys that are handling the ball right now, a majority of the time, Gabe Cupps is, you know, 10.4. Trey Galloway's 16. Those are really low numbers. And if you look at, like, KenPom has a statistic, basically assists as a percentage of field goals made. They're 134th in the country. The offense is not what's scoring points, I guess, is my point here.
No, they're not. And their defense.
Guys getting to the free throw line.
Yes.
It's more straightforward post-ups. I think there are just not enough guys right now that Indiana's got, other than Renew and Ware to some extent, that Indiana's got a clear-eyed idea of these are the kinds of shots they need. This is how we get them those shots. And this is how we repeat that process over and over again. And there's a lot that goes into that. Not having a sixth-year point guard goes into that.
Yes.
Not hitting enough threes to just sort of space the floor and make life a lot simpler in the post goes into that. Playing a guy at the three in Mackenzie Mbako, who I think is, again, there was sort of this debate in the preseason, and even when he was recruited, is Mackenzie Mbako a three? Is he a four? Well, Indiana's always going to play him as a three, and I think he wants that opportunity. But I think until recently, he had struggled to kind of figure out where, you know, basically where that offense was, if you understand what I'm saying, when the block was kind of taken away from him, even if it was on the drive. So, I mean, there's a lot of layers into it. But, you know, right now, ultimately, we can talk about this team's defensive shortcomings a little bit if you want. But they just, you know, they cannot score enough to take games away from teams. And actually, I thought that was what was most encouraging about that Kansas game. Indiana finishes that game under 1 point per possession. But that first half, you know, they were playing a borderline elite team, 40 points. I think they were up
part of my frustration is because you saw them getting out and going, trying to beat Kansas up the floor, and then on Tuesday night you saw them, like, deliberately stop. They get a rebound and it was like, oh, hey, let's walk it up here and get going. So, yes, I agree with that. There has to be a little bit more fluidity to it because the Domo Arigato, Mr. – Roboto sometimes in the half court breaks down and they play east and west, and they don't get a lot of easy buckets. They don't get a ton of runouts. They don't get it off the glass and go. I think that should be a focus because all these guys can run.
No, I mean, I get that, but you know, there's things you got to do to be able to run. You got to be able to create turnovers. You got to get stops. You got to be better rebounding the ball defensively. Then, I mean, right now, Indiana's opponent offensive rebounding rate is 147th in the country. They're not clearing the boards enough. And I think, again, if
Connecticut if we hurt look that back number, on, Kansas didn't help that number.
Well, honestly, no. I would actually argue that what has been more of a problem for Indiana in
long
that
rebound
regard,
threes.
I mean, listen, Kansas hurt them, but Kansas was a
Connecticut has as many offensive rebounds as Indiana had defense.
Yeah, I mean,
rebounds.
UConn was a tough one. Indiana had more offensive rebounds than Kansas did.
By one or two, right.
What's a problem is when you're allowing 9 offensive rebounds to Morehead State, or if you want to go even further back, you're allowing 13 rebounds to Florida Gulf Coast offensive rebounds. You're playing a really undersized Army team, and almost half of their rebounds, 11 of 26, are offensive.
What,
Wright State gets 14 offensive rebounds, which again just shouldn't be happening when you consider. But here's the issue, and here's where I'm not quite prepared to say this is one thing or this isn't. You know, this is absolutely this or it's absolutely that. A big part of the offensive rebounding problem in the aggregate this season, we can look at the UConn game. We can look at the Kansas game, some key rebounds, you know, that somebody missed here or there, second chance points that cost them in big moments. A big part of that offensive rebounding number is smaller teams are basically just chucking and chasing. And the reason they are is because even if they don't shoot a ton of threes, even if they don't hit a ton of threes, and some of these teams, you know, Army is, I mean, I'll look at their numbers now, but when they played Indiana, they were no great shakes shooting the three, and they still are not. They take a lot of threes, but they don't hit a lot of threes. Morehead State takes quite a few threes, doesn't always hit all its threes. Florida Gulf Coast, which I think shot, was it 13? Yeah, they made 13 threes, and they attempted 34 in that game. They are not a good three-point shooting team at all, not percentage-wise, not in terms of, you know, the percentage of their field goals that are threes, not in terms of how many points they score off threes. They are average at best in all those areas. But teams know, and I think smaller teams are the ones that are doing this more often to Indiana, if they chuck up a bunch of threes and they miss them all, then they'll lose the game, and there's no harm in that because they're expected to. But if they make some, Florida Gulf Coast made 13. I think Army made 13. Wright State made 11 or 12. Teams know that if they make a bunch of those threes, Indiana's not good enough offensively to compensate for it at the other end. That will keep the game close, and it will put pressure on Indiana ultimately on the scoreboard. And because Indiana's not a great offensive rebounding team, taking shots that lead to longer caroms may add possessions. It's basically one of those things where they just say, everyone expects us to lose anyway. This isn't necessarily our offense, but we're going to buy into it or lean more, even if it is a big part, bigger part of our offense, we're going to lean into it even more heavily tonight because this team doesn't rebound long caroms and it doesn't hit threes, which means that all we got to do is hit a few, throw a few in from 25 feet, and this team's going to have a harder time compensating for that at the other end of the floor. And I bring that up because, quietly, Indiana's been a little bit better in those areas. You know, they didn't out-rebound Michigan. They held them, you know, pretty much right on line. Michigan only had 8 offensive rebounds. I know Maryland was kind of a disaster when they came here, but they heavily out-rebounded Maryland, like 46 to 30. They pretty much beat Morehead State because they got heavy on the glass. They out-rebounded Morehead State 47 to 39, and they had 15 offensive rebounds, and those second chances were a big part of their comeback. So this is a very long-winded way of making a very simple point, which is it is possible Indiana's getting better. Slowly, excruciatingly, sometimes incredibly nervously, but it is possible Indiana's getting better from these games. I just understand anybody who at some point looks at it and says, okay, but it's almost Big Ten play again. Can we really keep doing this?
Indiana allowed Morehead State's 7th offensive rebound with 10:05 to go in the first half. Morehead State finished with 9 total offensive rebounds. That's 2 in the next 30 minutes. So that makes your point.
And that's where I think, again, it's it's meaningful to look at like a.
And my point would be Trey Galloway,
McKenzie Mbako, or Trey Galloway, whose rebounding numbers have gone up.
Trey Galloway had zero rebounds in 38 minutes in that game, so that's part of it as well. Because, well, Gabe Cupps had five, okay, but long three-pointers, chuck it and chase it. If you can figure that out, other coaches are figuring it out, you have to have guards rebound. You have to have perimeter guys rebound. You can't.
Well, McKenzie Mbako, I bring up his rebounding numbers because he is, in effect, a perimeter guy. He's playing the three. I mean, I know he's got a forwards body, but seven rebounds against Morehead State, five rebounds against Kansas, seven against Maryland, four at Michigan. Like, you know,
very nice.
He is crucial, and this is where I go back to the idea that
I think his minutes go along with that
excruciatingly. But Indiana might be getting better because some of these individual guys are figuring some things out. He's the guy who's in the position, free throw line extended, to go get the ball. If you understand what I'm saying.
I do understand, and the other part of this is that's why he's staying on the court. He's doing something more besides catching and shooting the basketball. And the quicker he figures that out, and again, you know, El Marco Jackson was a five-star recruit. Did he come in here and blow your doors off the other night? He didn't blow mine off. He's a nice player.
No.
But that's the point. Xavier Booker can't get on the floor for Tom Izzo, top three national recruit. So everybody gets their underwear twisted up a little bit when the five-star guy doesn't walk in and have 20 and 10. We all need to take a little bit of a deep breath. Here's what I know.
This is also something that is and sorry, this is a bit of a side note, but I do think this is changing. Like, there's been a noticeable decline in freshmen starting in Final Four games. After that run from about, like, 2009 to maybe Duke winning the title in 2015, where you had kind of these, like, power
one and done,
you know, freshman combos at Kentucky, at Duke. There were a couple other teams that put them together at times. The portal making it possible for teams to go plug holes with more experienced guys, a la, if you want to use an Indiana example, a Xavier Johnson or a Miller Kopp. Obviously, this year, Kalel Ware, I know he's only a sophomore, but there's a big difference, you know, between 1 year of college basketball and 0 years of college basketball. The portal has almost made it more more common to see, I don't say freshmen struggle necessarily, but freshmen sort of not being thrust into these big roles immediately because you can improve your roster in this other way that puts really experienced players in your room, if that makes sense.
It does, and Kalel Ware is a sophomore, and Hunter Dickinson's played 1,000 games in college. There are differences in transfers. There are differences in big-time players. And once Indiana has room to grow into the season. If this was if six of their top eight were juniors, seniors, transfers, and grad transfers, I'd have way more questions than I do now. There is room to get going. There is room for these guys to grow into it. And, yes, there's plenty of spaces to get better. But I think the one thing we can agree on as we get to a quick break here is this is not an offensively gifted team. And when you get in tight ball games, one pass threes, one pass jumpers from 18 feet – probably aren't the best way to get back in that. Don't forget about those big guys sitting down there on the block who can't pass the ball to themselves. We'll talk about that. We'll get ready for North Alabama tonight. Indiana then will have Kennesaw on the 29th before heading back to the Big Ten on January 3rd for Nebraska. Zach Osterman joins us via Skype. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. Well, they're open at 11 a.m. daily. Get over there. Get your gift cards. Those stocking stuffers are great. You know what else makes a great stocking stuffer? Osterman would like this. A bottle pick whiskey. Get over there. See what the Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood has. We'll take a time out for Diane Daly's news headlines. More with my great friend from the Indy Star next.
Come together on Kirkwood at the Crazy Horse and catch your favorite football games on the big screens throughout the restaurant. With a great view from every seat, their full bar features your favorite spirits, including 300 high-end whiskeys and tequilas, plus 80 craft, domestic, and imported beers. Enjoy their delicious handmade menu items like pulled pork nachos, hand-dipped fish and chips, or build your own Angus burgers. The Crazy Horse Tavern on Kirkwood is open daily at 11 for lunch, dinner, or late night. Celebrating 40 years. Order online at crazyhorseindiana.com.
What could be more important than crystal clear vision? The Eye Center of Southern Indiana can make that a reality for you. The Eye Center provides cataract surgery, LASIK surgery, and any medical eye care need. The Eye Center's wide range of innovative technology provides the best eye care has to offer. Call the Eye Center today to schedule an appointment with one of our expertly trained doctors at 812-334-1213. That's 812-334-1213.
I'm Diane Daly for Bloomington's Voice, 98.7 WGCL. This holiday update is brought to you by Green and Schultz Trial Lawyers. When it comes to holiday music, one of the most popular songs of the modern era was written by an Indiana native. Bobby Helms was born in Bloomington in 1933, just as his family was struggling through the depths of the Great Depression. The entire Helms family had a talent for music. While he was still a boy, Bobby and his brother Freddie found local success performing as a duo. In his early 20s, Bobby Helms moved to Nashville, Tennessee to become a country music singer and songwriter. It wasn't long before he was signed to Decca Records. In less than a year, his song Fräulein was number one on the country music charts. It was followed by another hit, My Special Angel, which also made it to the top of the charts. He was named Billboard's Most Promising New Vocalist and Best Male Vocalist in 1957. That same year, Helms recorded the now classic Jingle Bell Rock. Just before Christmas of that year, Dick Clark played the song on American Bandstand, and it quickly became a big hit around the country. Helms has been recognized by the Rockabilly Hall of Fame and in 2009 was inducted into the Monroe County Hall of Fame. Another Bloomington native who wrote a couple of Christmas songs was Hoagy Carmichael. But Carmichael was born 7 years before Bobby Helms. He initially studied law at IU but later decided to write music full-time. Hoagy Carmichael not only wrote the most recorded song of all time, Stardust, but he also wrote many other American standards, including Heart and Soul and Georgia on My Mind. During his long career, Carmichael made hundreds of recordings. He also appeared on radio and TV and in several films. In 1962, he appeared in cartoon form in the Flintstones movie. Hoagy Carmichael died December 27, 1981. I'm Diane Daly.
Eco-Friendly Mechanical, your local heating and cooling specialist, has been a locally owned and operated business for over 40 years, offering the Bloomington area with residential service professionals specifically trained to work on your heating and cooling system. Eco-Friendly Mechanical features the very latest in radiant floor heating, geothermal systems, and high-efficiency heating and cooling upgrades. When it's time to service, repair, or replace your heating and cooling system, there are a lot of choices out there. But be careful. In today's industry, most service technicians are trained salespeople, paid more money to close the deal on the spot. If you're tired of today's gimmicks and scare tactics, then call the eco-friendly experts at Eco-Friendly Mechanical to find out about today's latest and greatest technologies with old-fashioned personal friendly service. Call Eco-Friendly Mechanical, the experts in eco-friendly systems, at 812-333-1223 and ask about their EcoShield energy saving maintenance plans or to schedule an appointment today. Call them at 812-333-1223 or online at ecofriendlyhvac.com.
Live from downtown Bloomington, it's Glass in the Afternoon on Bloomington's Voice, 98.7 WGCL.
Your Money with David Hayes follows us at 6 o'clock. At 7 o'clock, CBS Sports Tonight. 7:30, Thursday Night Football. Saints and Rams get you your football fix here before the weekend hits. 7:30 pregame for an 8:15 kick from SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles. And most of us here will be tuning to the Big Ten Network. Why? Indiana basketball taking on North Alabama. The Lions are in town. Terrifying. 8:30 this evening. That actually helps me out tonight. I usually hate these times, but tonight, that's a good one. I'll be a little selfish. I'm allowed to be. The Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour rolls on. We also thank our friends at Carpets Plus Color Tile. You know, no two families' needs are the same, whether it's carpet, vinyl plank, hardwood floors, a walk-in shower, or a custom backsplash. Carpets Plus Color Tile will help you find what's best. And don't forget the Hoosier Hills Credit Union offers members and businesses better service with fewer fees than the big banks. Hoosier Hills in Ellettsville, HoosierHills.com. Member, well, you can be one too. Zach Ostrom from the Indy Star joins us somewhere in the Ethernet here on a Thursday afternoon. Game day in the city of Bloomington. The North Alabama Lions are in town. They're 6-6. They've got 4 1,000-point scorers. Surely Indiana will cover the 14.5 tonight, right? Right?
Yeah, you would. I mean, you would hope so.
And that was the interesting thing about Morehead State. In you know, they had fourth year and fifth year and grad transfers and guys that played Power Five basketball. So they were here last year. The arena probably didn't have that effect. This will be North Alabama's third trip here since 2019. Did we get the scheduling wrong? Should we just be better? No, I'm not going to get into North Alabama. This is about the Candy Stripers figuring out. We've seen Trey Galloway. We've seen Anthony Walker, two of the upperclassmen, two of the only upperclassmen that play. What's the recipe tonight after a quick turnaround to get this thing moving in the right direction before Christmas hits this weekend?
I mean, I think it's just if Indiana really is making improvement here, I think it is very much kind of just showing more improvement in everything we've talked about. You know, I don't think you can reasonably expect Indiana to start shooting threes prolifically or well. There's going to be a night here or there where they hit a bunch, where everybody just kind of finds the rhythm at the same time. But, you know, I don't think that's – let's say Indiana goes out and hits 12 threes tonight. I don't think that's something you can count on being part of the formula going forward. I think – I mean, like, you know, again, it's a bit of an aside, but Mike Woodson keeps saying we're taking enough threes. I think he's saying that like somebody who knows his team shouldn't be shooting too many threes. And we can have a broader discussion about roster management and what he should have targeted in the portal last year and – you know, possibly leaving himself with too few shooters. But I think he pretty clearly understands that, or believes anyway, that this team is shooting the right amount of threes for its talent. It's just not hitting enough to sort of make that worthwhile. But I think if you can continue showing, you know, improvement on defense, improvement on the glass, things that frankly, and again, we're kind of grasping at straws a little bit because Indiana, you know, we're talking about improvement from beating Army by 8, you know, or Morehead State by 1. That's kind of where this team is right now. But, you know, if you can, what is the thing Kurt Cignetti said? Stack good days.
Yep.
Right now, if you're Indiana, that's all you have to be worried about. And if you can, you know, see a little more McKenzie and Baco in the offense, continue to develop that bench a little bit such that it's not just kind of one guy you're looking for impact, you know, stats and scoring off of. If you can just kind of keep pushing the ceiling a little bit further up and a little bit further up, eventually you get to Big Ten play. And, you know, frankly, you'll play in some games. You look at a Nebraska, you look at an Ohio State at home, you look at, a, you know, those first four games, really Rutgers away, Minnesota at home. You know, I don't know how much those teams are going to look at Indiana and say, this is a scalp we got to go get. And so maybe there's an extent to which you lower the bar enough to sneak up on some teams early in the season. But right now, if you're Indiana, you just need to – stack good performances because you come off of Kansas and that feels like maybe the best game. Either that or Michigan is the best game Indiana played all year. And then, you know, you come off that barely beating Morehead State. It's just it is admittedly not ideal.
It is, but you know what? I'll point out one other thing in here. Indiana led Maryland by 23 with 12 minutes to go. They were killing Maryland. They were up. Now, they scored 2 points the rest of the game. But they earned a 23-point lead against a Big Ten team at home. That's why Morehead State makes you scratch your head. That's why Army, Florida Gulf Coast, right, all those examples are absolutely true. And then you absolutely blast a Big Ten opponent, and then you go win on the road. All right, again, if that's the trade-off, playing all these close games and being 2-0 in league play, I mean, we can't change it anyhow, but at least there's something to build on there. At least Indiana is not explaining away losses. At least Indiana is not looking at itself. And again, this sounds apologetic. On the 21st day of December and saying, well, if we don't win the league or the tournament, we're not in. There is at least some hope. Xavier Johnson is coming back. I would like Indiana to clean up the glass because I think rebounding is effort. Effort is easy to fix. Mike Woodson has told us that before, and I think guys need to start finding more defined roles, and I'm not sure how you do that, but if you're playing and you're Trey Galloway, look, man, I know you threw your guts on the floor Saturday night. If you're a sophomore, I give you a pass on Tuesday, but you're a senior and don't grab a rebound in 38 minutes, man, that's hard for me to digest. You got to be that guy.
One. No, he had none. You're right. I was looking at the wrong box.
Right. And again, I mean, Mike Woodson was making jokes about his guards rebounding a couple weeks ago, saying, I'm 60 years old, 62. I could run into one. So we got to have a little bit more effort. We got to have a little bit more. Indiana, North Alabama tonight, 8:30. The Lions, Big Ten Network. And then a week from tomorrow is Kennesaw State. That's BTN Plus. So those of you who bought the women's game on Monday, you get another one coming up on Friday as well. Then Indiana will return to the road. Nebraska, Big Ten Network, 9 o'clock on January 3rd. All right, Kurt Cignetti, man, he is a breath of fresh air. He is not going to take anything from anybody. He already told you with six words. Let's see. Purdue sucks. So does Ohio State and Michigan. Eight words at a basketball game, what he's about. But yesterday, buddy, over almost over 20 minutes, he kind of pulled the curtain back on just about everything. That was sort of refreshing to hear. And Indiana, what the quarterback plan is, what the recruiting plan is, how guys stayed, who's leaving, getting the right guys on and off the bus. Give me some takeaways, what you thought from National Signing Day yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, he talked like a guy who I think we can all tell has a real sense of confidence in himself, and I think that's probably earned. We'll see if he can continue his success at Indiana, but you can't really argue with 13 winning seasons in 13 years, whatever the level. He also talked like a guy, you know, I mean, he said it was, I think he described it as 20 days of fourth and one. You know, he talked like a guy that was talking fast because he's been moving fast because he's had to, obviously. You know, there was, I mean, Indiana was, if I'm not mistaken, under 60 countable scholarship players when he took the job. I think Indiana's number of players in the portal peaked at 27 or 28, something like that. So, and that's not counting, you know, seniors that can't come back. That's not counting, guys that were out of eligibility or declared for the draft or whatever. So, I mean, in the most basic sense, he just needed to put some, he just needed to rebuild his roster. And I think he did that with a handful of he did that with a little bit of everything, I guess. He pulled he pulled kind of a handful of everything. He got some transfers, he brought some guys with him from James Madison, he confirmed a lot of current commitments, he brought a couple really important guys back out of the portal, he went out and got some other guys in the portal. You know, it was clear that he kind of addressed some, there were some clear positions of need, you know, that I think you could see he felt from kind of early on, receiver being one, quarterback being another, arguably running back as well, that he just sort of felt like, you know, this has got to be how it works for me. This is what we've got to focus on. He covered a lot of ground in a very short space of time, and he had to. You know, this was the reason we talked about it during the coaching search. This was the reason why Scott Dolson wanted this job filled so quickly, was because he wanted a coach that was going to be able to get in, get his feet set, and just start running, because that's the nature of the December calendar in college football anymore.
Off and running, Kurt Cignetti in IU football. Part of that press conference, I'm taking that back, 99.8% of that press conference was talking about the offensive side of the football. What does that say for the defense? Or is that the theory moving forward? Hey, this guy's an offensive guy. His quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator have put quarterbacks as player of the year in these conferences. The quarterback from Ohio was a player of the year in the MAC. He's coming here. The light is shining awfully brightly on the offense.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was obviously this suggestion that Indiana's kind of got these silent commits that have to play in bowl games. I think a lot of people are presuming that they may include more migration from James Madison to Indiana. They play their bowl game in 2 days, the Armed Forces Bowl, forgive me. I think it felt like the sort of, we'll see what these future sort of transfers look like. And I think Cignetti said they're leaving after kind of the guys that maybe they've got under wraps. But coming in, he suggested there'd probably be room for 3 to 5 more players. You know, we'll see what it looks like. If a number of those guys are on defense, then, you know, then that probably just sort of tells you that Cignetti wanted to start with, you know, kind of offensive positions, maybe felt like with his connections and things, it was going to be the offense that it was going to be a little bit harder to fix. Or maybe he felt like, you know, as you kind of pointed out there, his background is offense. Maybe he felt like, hey, I've got this NIL number. I'd like to take it for a walk a little bit more on offense. And they got some pretty interesting transfers. You know, they were able to keep Donovan McCulley and Carter Smith. And then they got a lot of receivers with a lot of proven production over a number of years, including a couple guys from Power 5 programs or Power 4 or whatever we're talking about anymore. And they also obviously got a quarterback that will have to earn it. You're never going to promise anybody anything, obviously, but a quarterback that for all the world looks like he's Indiana's immediate future behind center, while Cignetti and his staff maybe pick kind of a long-term successor. So, you know, it's probably more than anything, just a function of what Cignetti felt he could get done in the time he had. And we'll see if that's borne out by how he finishes off this part of the cycle at the end.
And yes, the offense needs fixing. That's the other part as well. He brought up the last 3 years, how things weren't going very well here. And that is interesting because the quarterback room, in I think the opinion of most that follow Indiana football, has been a large issue of why the last few years has not been stable. Would that be an accurate depiction?
I think that's fair. And I mean, you know, there's an extent to which it felt like Indiana just kind of reached for depth and options, and not necessarily that these guys were just, you know, sort of auto takes. I mean, each one of the quarterbacks Indiana brought in basically, you know, either A, had the resume that you would like, and, you know, someone like Curtis Rourke, and I think it's worth saying Indiana never really seemed involved in Jordan McLeod's recruitment. McLeod is the reigning Sun Belt Player of the Year. He was JMU's quarterback last year, and Indiana didn't really seem interested in bringing him in. So, I mean, it's clear they did some evals and decided that there was somebody sort of maybe better that at least they thought was better they could go get. Alberto Mendoza was part of JMU's class, and Indiana just brought him over, which, you know, made a lot of sense. They'd already done their eval with him. They liked what they had. They thought that maybe he was a little bit undervalued, and they brought him in. And then, you know, if a player like Tyler Cherry, who may be even better than his ranking, depending on who you talk to in that world, is interested, you know, you don't turn that down. Cherry's going to come in January. He's going to get a spring practice under his belt. And, you know, it's very possible we are eventually talking about him as Indiana's long-term solution at quarterback. But if nothing else, it kind of gives you options. You probably always have to presume that at least one guy is going to transfer if you've got five in the room. But I think you're correct in saying that the instability around the quarterback position has been a really sort of damaging feature for Indiana across the last, you know, what, 3 years, 4 years, I guess, basically every year since 2020. And I think Indiana is, you know, it's understandable maybe to add some insurance there.
And Scott Dolson told us in his introductory press conference, we wanted a coach that was a winner, and we want a coach that understands quarterbacks. And I think Kurt Cignetti is going to, well, he has checked those boxes in the recruiting side of things without any football to play until the end of August. Early September, we just gotta hang on with both hands, and the fun part's dreaming out loud, right? But bringing back the players he brought back, you opined last week that perhaps you thought it would be a handful of guys out of the transfer portal. Is Indiana done with their former guys? Is that it? Are those numbers done because of the numbers Kurt presented at Media Day? So if anybody,
I mean, I don't know. Obviously, he said there were guys that wanted to come, that expressed interest in coming back, that the staff didn't want to take. So it's you know, it's possible that they're done. There could be one or two guys in there. Again, you know, he said there'd be, even after kind of this wave of bowl game commits, basically, there'd probably be 3 to 5 spots left open. So maybe there's still one or two names on their board from the old roster that have some interest in players that haven't committed out of the portal yet, and maybe getting them to withdraw from the portal in return. But it does seem like the bulk of maybe Indiana's retention, if not all of it, from the previous roster is done now.
All right, sounds good. So again, there's no timeline that ends it. When does this magical portal close this time around?
It's sometime in January. It's right around, I forget what day it is. I think this is a 30-day window.
Okay.
So it opened on the 4th, and it, like I said, I think it's 30 days. So I think it closes on like the January 4th or 5th, something like that. I know there's an extension for teams that are in the playoff.
I figured there'd be something. Because obviously some of those guys
will have a game, you know, will have to delay. If they want to transfer, they'll presumably have to delay their recruitments until after their season. So there's an exception for guys in the playoff for like another 10 days or something like that. But the bulk of it will be done by early January.
All right, I'll let you get off to the Simon Scott Assembly Hall. You've got plenty of things to do tonight. Hug the boys. Tell your wife I said hello. Merry Christmas. We will get caught up with you on January 4th. By then, Indiana will have played one, two, three basketball games. And, well, we'll have college football to talk about as well. We'll see where Kurt Cignetti's crew is at that point and relive it all as we kick off 2024 together. Thank you so much for your time, buddy. It's always appreciated, and we'll be reading you tonight at Zach Osterman on the X and IndyStar.com. Thanks, bro.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me as always, Glass.
That's my buddy, Zach Osterman. You want to get smarter, read him. Support local journalism as well. And you can do so, IndyStar.com. We have great, great, great contributors, Jimmy Gordillo, HeraldTimesOnline.com, at Jim Gordillo, who keeps us up to date on the high school side of things. And our insider, and the insider from the Indianapolis Star, is Zach Osterman as well. We have a busy, busy night for you tonight. When we wrap up here in just a couple of minutes, David Hayes, Your Money, will take you till 7 o'clock. Then we will have a quick CBS Sports Tonight before Thursday night.